I'm Jen, and today I'm joined by Karen and Marima. Hello, ladies.
Hi.
Hi. All right, so this week we've got lots of cool book news stuff to talk about, including some very interesting banned book topics, because Banned Books Week was last week. And Karen and I, and I think Marima, you are, oh, actually, Marima and I, Karen's already talked about hers, are going to talk about our staff challenge for our books that we chose, which I think were kind of interesting. But first, as always, we're going to kick it off with what we've been reading over the last couple weeks. So, Karen, why don't you go ahead and kick it off?
Sure. The first book that I read for this week is one that I've been talking about forever. Everybody's probably sick of me talking about it, but it was Ashes to Ashes by Jenny Han and Siobhan Vivian, and it's the third book in their Burn for Burn series, which if you remember, I started kind of on a whim, wasn't sure if I was going to like it, but figured I'd give it a try, and it ended up being something completely different from what I was thinking it was going to be. And it was really good. And the last book is probably the best one yet, although it has one of those like epilogues. I don't even know if it was titled an epilogue. It was just the last chapter that basically changed everything. And I'm not sure if I'm quite on board with the direction they decided to go in. But up until that point, the book is really good. And then my second book was Queen of Hearts, The Wonder by Colleen Oakes. This is the second one in her Queen of Hearts series, which discusses how the Queen of Hearts went from being sort of a naive, innocent princess to the villain in Alice in Wonderland. And it's pretty good. I didn't like this one as much as I liked the first book, but it does show you how she becomes a villain. And I'm really excited for the third book, which is the last one, just to see her transformation kind of come to a close.
Very fun. Those sound really cool. Marima, have you been up to any reading this past couple of weeks?
I have not read anything that could be termed fun. So I guess I'll just mention a couple of things I'm excited to read once I have time. Wolf in White Van is still at the top of my list. I won't talk about that because I've been talking about that one for months. It's on the pile, guys. Like, I'm trying to get through these books, but it's just busy time at the moment. Another one is The Infinite Sea, which is the sequel to The Fifth Wave by Rikki Yancey. That came out like last week, so I'm sure most people listening have already read that, but don't spoil me because I really love that series. But yes, just haven't had time yet. Another one that came this week that I'm looking forward to is called All the Bright Places. And I have no idea what this book is about, but I gather it has something to do with Post-it notes because the copy that they sent me is like covered in Post-it notes about
No,
things that are fun or something. I have no idea. It's let me look at the back. It's like, okay, two kids meet
they're saying
like
it's
on
the
the
Faulkner
bell
Stars
tower.
meets Eleanor and Park. It's kind of got
Right.
these elements of suicide and this like
Yeah.
how you meet people in the circumstances. It's optioned for a movie already, so
I
it,
know it's
yeah.
gonna star Elle Fanning. I'm wondering if they like communicate through Post-it notes or something. The book
No,
cover
I
has
think
them on
it's.
it as
I
well,
know.
so like,
I have that book too. So
yeah,
yeah.
I'm like, I don't know what this is, but it looks really cute. The good news is that one isn't out till January, so I have plenty of time to read it, and it won't, catch up with me like Wolf in White Van has. So yeah, they're on my list. I probably won't get to them for a little while, but those are a few things that I'm excited for the moment. So let's do that instead this week. Sorry, guys.
No worries. Sometimes things get really crazy. The last like week and a half, all I've done is like schoolwork. So I completely understand because I've read all of two books in like the last 2.5 weeks. It's very sad for me. I read a book called For Real, and it's by Allison Cherry. It's her second novel, and it is about these two sisters that decide to go on a reality like race around the world kind of show. And one of the sisters is painfully shy and awkward. She has a love of like TV and like pop culture-y things. The other sister has just graduated from college, and on her graduation night, they're having a party at her house, like her apartment, and she goes to see her boyfriend and finds him cheating on her. So the sisters contrive this kind of plan to get revenge. And the revenge is that they know that the boy is going to be on this Race Around the World show, so they make an effort to get on the show. And the way they convince people to let them run the race is that they're going to be there for revenge and to make his life miserable, which is kind of a really fun concept. It's got a lot of potential. I don't know if the execution was quite where it needed to be. There were a couple of things that felt plot-wise that felt like they just kind of dropped out in the story. And you're like, but wait, where did that go? It was such a strong idea early on. And so I liked it. I think it was entertaining, and it's a really fast read, but at the same time, I felt like there were some things that felt really incomplete about it. So there were things that I felt needed a little more closure, maybe. So I liked it. It was interesting, definitely worth a read. It comes out, I think, in December. And then the other one I read is called Assault and Storm, and it's by Kendall Colper, and it is kind of this really cool story about the witches, or about a family of witches. They're called the Roe Witches, and they basically live off of this island. I think it's up near Nova Scotia. And essentially, they are the witches who all the fishermen and people go to in order to bring them good tidings or to tell them different things. And it's about a young girl who knows she's a witch. Her mother leaves her with her grandmother for the longest time, and she starts practicing, and she can basically tell people about their dreams and what their dreams mean. And what happens is her mother comes back and takes her away from her grandmother and brings her to live in this very fancy house. And the expectation is that she will marry well, and that will be the end of it, that she's not to practice magic anymore. Even though the mother says she doesn't practice magic, it's kind of clear that the mother's using magic on various people in their lives to make things the way that they are. And so it's about the girl trying to get back to her magical roots and get back to her grandmother. And because the grandmother is older and weak, she's not as good as practicing magic for the people of the island. So the people of the island get angry at the Roe Witches. So it's this really cool kind of historical story about the idea of witchcraft and stuff like that. I really liked it. It's very atmospheric, too, in a lot of ways. So those were the two books that I read this week. Not overly exciting, not an overly long list, but I liked them. So, Marima, do you want to kick it off talking about the 5 books that define you, which is our staff challenge, which a very large portion of Hypeable staff will be doing. And every Tuesday, you guys can see which Hypeable staff member will be posting their 5 books that define them. And the 3 of us have already gone. So starting this week, it will be staff outside of Book Hype that will be posting their top books that define them, which will be really interesting because we have some really interesting people on staff that definitely read things that are very different from what we read and what we talk about even. So, Marima, you want to kick it off?
Sure. I found this super hard after last week when I was teasing our guest hosts about making their lists. This was really difficult. So I kind of went with books, I guess, that I read when I was younger. That kind of seemed to be the theme here that I still love and like still have stayed with me. So the first one is The Hobbit by J.R.R. Tolkien, because that is the like first book that I really fell in love with. Like we've talked about The Hobbit before when I was really, really young. So then the natural continuation from that would be the Harry Potter series, which is another book that I fell in love with when I was like 7. So these have been books that I've been reading for like 16 years. So I think that's safe to say that, you know, counts as defining me. The third book I'm sure will surprise no one is The Shadow of the Wind by Carlos Ruiz Zafón, which is, you know, I mean, guys, if I haven't convinced you to read these books by now, like nothing I can say is probably going to convince you to read them because I'm not exactly shy about going on about them. But, I think, you know, that's an interesting one because, as I said in my post, like that one's a translation. So I don't know what it's like in the original, but I can't read Spanish, so I'll probably never know. Maybe I should learn it so I could read that. That would be cool. And the fourth book is Saving Francesca by Melina Marchetta. It was so hard to choose one Melina Marchetta book. Like I need to make a list of the 5 Melina Marchetta books that define me because I couldn't deal with this. Yeah, so that one I chose because above all of the other ones, like that was the first book of hers that I read, if you may be sensing a theme here. But I think it was the first book I read that like had characters in it that I was, that I thought, oh, those are actual teenage characters that I could imagine meeting, like, you know, set in Australia and all of this. But yeah, it was the first time that I read a book that I thought, oh, I could like legitimately meet these characters. Like they seem like real people to me. So as a teenager, like that's very exciting because you think, you know, your life is super unique and, you know, so special and whatever else, you know, is going on in a teenager's brain. And then the last one, I chose a lot of series, so I think that's cheating, but whatever, is His Dark Materials by Philip Pullman, which I've been trying to convince Karen to read.
Karen, I think you would love them.
Yeah.
I really do. They're so amazing.
I've read them. I've read all three.
I'm trying to convince Karen to reread.
Yeah, and I didn't like them, and both Merrima and Natalie are really mad at me for this. So I need to read them again. I told them I would give them another shot.
Yeah, his Dark Materials series is, as you guys know, like I'm a huge fantasy sci-fi nerd. His Dark Materials is the best like fantasy sci-fi series I have ever read. It's about parallel worlds, and it just deals with so many different issues. And like I can't condense it into like a one sentence plug. Like it's not possible. They're so fantastically well written. They deal with such great issues and such great topics, and they have like the most fantastic characters. They're just so complex and so detailed and so deep. And like I would be, yeah, I don't know. I would like to know if there's anyone else, I guess like Karen, who has read them and not felt like this, you know, connection to them, because Karen is the first person I know who has read these books and not thought like, oh my God, this, why isn't everyone talking about these? Like these are the greatest things of all time. So yeah, those are my five. Before Jen does hers, I have to do my honorable mentions because this was really difficult.
I'm cheating. Series and honorable mentions. Oh boy.
Right. Yeah, I'm cheating. So whatever. It's fine. I don't care. I can do what I want. No one made the rules. So I was just like, well, I guess no one said I can't do these, so I'm just going to do them. So yeah, my honorable mentions would be To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee, which is like one of my favorite books ever. The Book Thief, obviously. Someone commented on my thing and wait, what did they say? They were like, no Book Thief, who are you, vile impersonator, and what have you done with Merrima White? And it's like, guys, I really love The Book Thief, but like I don't think it defines me as a person, but you know, whatever, maybe it does. Maybe my like love for it has changed because I've had to convince people to read it. The Bell Jar by Sylvia Plath would be another one. And then like just the general collected works of Roald Dahl, who influenced me a lot as a child. And Keats, I don't know if poems count, but I was like, no, he like his poems are in a book, so I'm gonna say that that's fine. Yes, so those are mine, and that was really tough. No one make me do anything like that again, please.
It was really hard. Like I sat there and I'm like, well, maybe this one. Maybe this one. Like it was so hard to choose. Like yeah. I don't even know if I chose all the ones that I should have chosen. You know what I mean? Like as I sat down to do it, I'm like,
Yeah, mine is more like, here are the five books that define me on a given Tuesday in September when I wrote this post.
Exactly. For this week.
Yeah. I was feeling very nostalgic this week, obviously.
Yeah, I guess
when so. I wrote this.
All right. So mine are really odd, I think. They're a very eclectic mix. And I don't know if everyone, like, as they read them, people were like, you don't read those kinds of books. What are you talking about? My first one, I'll explain, because I think people are like, oh, boy. And I fully expected to get made fun of for choosing it. But the first one I chose was Twilight. And the reason I chose Twilight was because it was the first kind of book that I read where I went to find people on the internet to talk about books. It's not something I had ever done before. I wasn't really part of the whole Harry Potter craze and fandom that was online. I didn't do that. I was in college at the time for the first time, and it just wasn't something I had a whole lot of time to do. So it wasn't something I did. But with Twilight, it was very different. And so that's how I kind of got into fandom in general. It's how I met Andrew, believe it or not, and why I work for Hypeable now is that we met through this kind of thing. So that's why it's on the list, is because it changed me in such a big way. It got me more into YA books. It introduced me to people that I would never have met before. It, you know, got me to do things that I may have never done before. So that's why it's on my list, because it did have a huge impact. Whether or not I love the subsequent books is a whole different story, but that's how it affected me in general. It changed everything I do, in a sense. My second book was called The Power of One by Bryce Courtenay, and this is the book I think people are like, it's a very serious book. It's an adult book. I might have been in high school when I read it, and I would go to the library and I would just go into the adult section and wander around and just pick up random books that I thought looked good. And there was something about this book that I thought was really cool. It was set in South Africa. It's about apartheid, basically, and about this one boy who goes through so many things in his life. And it's violent and it's ugly, but it's a lot of their history, too, that comes from that, you know, what was going on in South Africa at the time. So I loved it. I thought it was a fantastic book, and about this one boy who goes through so much from childhood to adulthood. And it's really cool. I really suggest reading it if you like that kind of sweeping story. And again, it's set in South Africa, which is this beautiful country with lots of rich history that's very different from a lot of the history that we know in our own countries. And then I chose Anna and the French Kiss, because for me, Anna and the French Kiss was kind of one of the first young adult contemporary novels that I read and actually liked and respected. A lot of times you read them, you're like, oh my God, really? Or, oh, looky, another love triangle, or something like ridiculous. And I didn't really read young adult contemporary until I read Anna and the French Kiss. And then I kind of became a little more open about young adult contemporary. So that's why that one's on my list. And besides the fact that I love it wholeheartedly. And then I have a classic. I have Wuthering Heights. And I know that's not like a beloved classic. It's not everyone's favorite classic.
I can't believe that's the one you chose.
Okay. Well, I'm going to explain it. I know it's really strange, right? But for me in high school, we had to read a lot of really like things that I did not enjoy in my AP lit class. Like exposure to things in that class were like horrendous. Like Silas Marner. Like I can tell you all the bad ones we read, because most of them were like painful to flip the page. For me, who likes to read and can read quickly, I would fall asleep reading them. They were that bad. But Wuthering Heights, I loved it because of the ugliness of the characters. Like, there is not a single character in that book that you want to like. They are so hideous, and it's like such an interesting look at human nature and what happens to people when certain situations come into play, and how not one of them was a good person. They were all just horrible. And so it kind of fascinated me in that way. And that's why I really liked it, because it was just this look about people that were just, they were never going to be okay. They were never going to be nice. They were never going to be any of those things. And it was a question of, were they raised that way? Is that who they chose to become? So that's kind of why I chose that one, because it kind of fascinated me in a lot of ways. You know, it was like a character study about these ugly, horrible people. So I kind of like it. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, horrible is like one word for
it. Yeah, they were horrendous, but it's fine. And then the last book I picked was a children's book by Shel Silverstein called The Giving Tree. And it actually turns 50 years old this month, or next month, October. So it turns 50 years old in October. And this book I remember so fondly because my grandma used to read it to me when I was little. So anytime you have that kind of connection with a book that, you know, someone who you've loved and grown up with reads to you, it kind of just sticks with you. And The Giving Tree has such a unique message to it. And so I really like that book as well. So it's kind of stuck with me, and it shaped me as a young reader into actually being a reader. Like when you have someone read to you when you're little, it makes you more interested in books and makes you want to pick books up more. So the more she read to me and the more we did book stuff, the more I was interested in books, which you guys know I'm kind of interested in books today, just a smidge, but
yay.
Yeah. So there's that. So those were my books. And I know Karen, you talked all about yours last week.
Yes, which but I also awesome. Just want to mention that you definitely just brought back a ton of memories for me when you mentioned Shel Silverstein, because I loved A Light in the Attic, and I haven't thought about that in so long. Oh my gosh, now I really want to like go back and read more of his stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. And the funny part is that like this past week was Banned Books Week, and both The Giving Tree and The Light in the Attic have both been on, The Giving Tree especially has been on the list of banned books frequently, which again, it's one of those things that makes me laugh. It's a children's book. Do you know what I mean? Like what I think there's a really solid message in there, but some people like take that message and twist it and make it into something really ugly. And so it fascinates me. Like that whole concept of banning a book fascinates me.
Yeah, especially
People are
I was
dumb.
just looking at this A Light in the Attic, and it says on Wikipedia, attempts have been made to ban the book from some libraries. Parents claiming that the poem How Not to Have to Dry the Dishes encourages messiness and disobedience.
Yeah,
Wow.
fitly, like it fascinates me on so many levels what people are willing to like go to bat for about banning a book and why they think they have the right to influences other people's choices and reading material.
I feel
Like,
like these people need a hobby. You know what I
yeah,
mean?
I
Like
don't.
a hobby outside of banning books. Like just
Yeah.
play golf or something, you know?
Yeah, it always amazes me. So speaking of banned books, let's talk a little bit. Last week was Banned Book Week. They had the top 10 list. Did you guys see it? We posted it. It was interesting. Captain Underpants being the big guy that he is, man. He led the list for the second year running for banned books because he's
I've never read
inappropriate.
those books, but like I mean, I can understand, you know, why someone might be like, oh, well, this one definitely would be inappropriate,
Yeah,
like just based on like the title and the cover. But
Captain
that's very funny
Underpants
to me.
is a little sassy. He's a little inappropriate.
I didn't realize he was so subversive. Maybe I should give him some more time.
Yeah, I'm really not sure about the violence. Like the reasons, here's the beauty of it. You can list the what happens is when they ban a book or a book is challenged, and a challenge, the difference between a ban and a challenge is a challenge is people are actively looking to get the book removed from either the school library, the public library, wherever. They're actively looking to get it removed. A ban is they've actually managed to get it removed. So that's the difference between the two. And so Captain Underpants, the reasons for it being challenged or banned was that it's offensive language, unsuited for age group, and violence. I'm not sure about the violence in Captain Underpants. Like, I'll have to go back and look, but I don't think it's any more violent than the cartoons that are on like Nickelodeon and Disney and everything else. So, I mean, I could be wrong, but I don't think I am. And then the second novel that was most challenged or banned was The Bluest Eye by Toni Morrison. And the reasons were offensive language, sexually explicit, unsuited for age group, and violence. I'm sensing a theme here. Are you guys sensing a theme?
Just a
Yeah,
little bit.
weird.
Number three was The Absolutely True Diary of a Part-Time Indian by Sherman Alexie. Reasons: drug, alcohol, smoking, offensive language, racism, sexually explicit, unsuited to age group. Interestingly, this book, more often than not, is on the New York Times best-selling list, so there's that.
Right, who thinks that that's racist?
I'm not really sure.
Like
Well,
conservative white people.
they address racism in the book. Because
Right.
it's about a Native American boy who has
I know.
hydrocephalus, right? So that's why I'm like, I'm not really sure how racism fits into that because it's addressing an actual thing. Like, I don't know.
I guess it's not about white people, so it's pretty racist.
I don't know. Oh wait, 50 Shades of Grey. I don't really know that. Okay, here, the one item in 50 Shades of Grey. So it says nudity, shocking. Offensive language, oh no, not that. Sexually explicit, can't believe it. Unsuited to age group, I'm not really sure which age group they're thinking of,
Yeah.
but okay. And then my favorite, religious viewpoint.
Really?
Really, that's one of them.
Why? I mean, I've
So
never read them, so like are
I.
they preaching? What's going on in them?
Yeah, while they're having S&M, sure they're preaching.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was like religious. I couldn't figure it out unless someone's like a blatant atheist. I have no idea. So it's kind of fascinating.
Are
Oh,
these in
and
any
then number
sort of
five, are you ready?
order?
I am. I'm reading them in order. These are the top 10.
I was asking if they were in order, like, if 50 Shades of Grey is number 4, like, does that mean anything, or is it just, like, these are the 10?
Yeah, it's the fourth most binge.
It's the fourth most challenged book for the year.
That seems kind of strange to me.
Okay. Yeah, well, The Hunger Games is the next one. Hunger Games is number 5.
I was surprised I was so low down, actually.
Yeah, but it's been out for a while.
I guess. Maybe people are losing steam over that one.
Well, it depends. Something new will come up and bump it for a while, and then they, like, when the movies come out, it tends to shoot back up. Like, this is, it's, like, basically they're playing to the popular. Do you know what I mean? Because there are plenty of books that should absolutely be on this list that have never once made the list because they're not a movie and because they're not in the news for other reasons.
Yeah, so no one knows that they exist.
Because I can absolutely name them, but because no one's out there actively seeking them, because they're not right in their face, they're not mentioned. Because if we go down to number 7 is Looking for Alaska. Looking for Alaska has been out, what, almost 8 years?
Right. That's always on this list, though.
Well, it's been on it before, but all of a sudden, Looking for Alaska is being optioned for a film now that because The Fault in Our Stars isn't on this list, interestingly.
No, but it might be soon.
Yeah, well, we'll get to that in a minute. But so for Looking for Alaska, bumped up the list for drugs, alcohol, smoking, sexually explicit, and unsuited to age group. Now, here's my other thing. Like, these are novels. They're in libraries, what have you. These same categories, the drugs, the alcohol, the smoking, the nudity, offensive language, whatever, also all appear in, like, TV shows. Do people get this up in arms about a TV show? Like, because legitimately, let's think about it. Alcohol, drugs, and smoking. Violence. Like, it's pretty amazing what they'll put on TV. So I always find it so funny how they look at books and choose a book. Do you know what I mean? And then the other one, Perks of Being a Wallflower, has made the list again, too. And then Bless Me, Ultima, and Bones, Bone, which is by Jeff Smith, round out the top 10. So, and then the classic lists. Here's my favorite part about the classic list is that all the books that are the most challenged on the classic lists are all the books that we teach in high school here. Like, it kind of makes me laugh. I'm like, we're teaching them. We're actively calling these amazing works of literature that everyone should learn for whatever reason. And they're actively challenged all the time. Like The Great Gatsby, Of Mice and Men, Lord of the Flies, 1984. So I don't know. I find that interesting. What do you, I mean, how do you guys do, like, lit classes in Australia, Merrima? Do you have, like, a curriculum where you read lots of novels? Do you read short stories? Is it, like, different?
Yeah, we do. So there's not, like, a generalized curriculum. In the early years, you kind of just read, like, whatever your teacher sets for the classes, which can be, like, yeah, novels, short stories, poetry, etc. And then when you get to the, like, final years of school, then there's, like, this huge list and the teacher chooses off it. You know, like, I don't know how many books, like 30 books are on it or something. And you choose, like, you know, whichever ones you want your kids to study. But, like, banned books is always, it amuses and, like, perplexes me because we don't have this phenomenon in Australia. I think the way that our schools are set up, like, the way that your school seem to work is that the parents actively have a say of, like, no, you can't teach this to my child, or, like, no, you can't have this in the library. And that's not really a thing in Australia. So this, it does amuse me because just, like, the reasons that these books are banned are so ridiculous in the first place. But obviously, like, I'm totally anti-censorship, so, like, it also bothers me, you know. It's easy to be amused from a distance, but it's not a good thing that this is happening. But yeah, we don't have this phenomenon. Like, you know, a parent can say they don't want their kid to learn a certain book or whatever, and, like, you know, they could be removed from the class when that's being taught, but not really in the, like, upper groups, when you're younger, maybe. But again, like, then it's just that one kid. It's not, like, pulled from the entire class. So,
yeah, I mean, well, yeah, in order for it to be pulled from an entire class or a library or anything like that, it takes a lot of people talking about it. It can't just be one complaint, or at least from the things I've read, it's not normally just one complaint. It's a multitude of complaints. And I have to say, it's, like, where I live, it's very rare to hear about banned books. Like, it's not something that happens here. So I've never had to experience that. We've always been able to read what we wanted. I worked at the library for a really long time. And, you know, I put things on the shelf that I'm sure people were not in love with. You know, I did have adults come and complain to me about certain language in books. I'm like, well, you know, the parents that are letting the kids take the books out are aware. Like, I make them aware before they take it out, and it's their choice. Or if you, but if you're taking it out as an adult to read and you're offended by the language, that's, then don't read the book. You're an adult. You can make that choice for yourself. But I had a couple of people complain to me about the books because they were inappropriate. And I was like, well, you don't have to read them. That didn't go over so well, by the way.
Yeah.
But I'm like, we have First Amendment right here. You have freedom of speech. You're allowed to read what you want to read and talk about what you want to talk about for the most part. And so it's always interesting to see what people think that they can impart upon others by narrowing down what they're allowed to read and talk about.
Yeah, so, except not to like get into a huge like conversation about, you know, the Constitution of America or whatever, but like you have freedom of speech and et cetera. And yet like this is a phenomenon that is like fairly restricted to America, where the parents feel that it's like, you know, participatory thing where they can say, they actively involved in like choosing the curriculum and stuff rather than like leaving it up to the discretion of a teacher or the school system.
As a teacher, I can tell you the parents aren't actively involved in choosing curriculum. There are certain areas of the country where there are different things at play, where there are heavy religious aspects that are in play. Like there are certain parts of the country that don't necessarily want to teach, or certain districts in the country that don't want to teach science or evolution. They want to teach creationism. And so there's a lot of things that come into play that aren't just like choices about curriculum. There are other things like religion and stuff that come into play, which again is a really, I don't know, it's a very interesting thing. But yeah, I get where you're coming from. So
yeah, you know what I mean? Like it's something that's like very foreign, very foreign to foreign countries. because yeah, like it's not a thing that happens generally. Obviously, like, you know, there have been cases of censorship in Australian history and like in all history, but as a like general phenomenon, as a thing, yeah, sort of American centric.
Yeah, well, it always makes me laugh too, because as soon as a book gets banned somewhere, its sales go through the roof.
Yeah, so I know. It's like the best promotion that I can receive.
Exactly. Hey, thanks for that. Like, there's that too. So I don't know, Karen. How do you feel about banned books? You've been kind of quiet.
I mean, there's really nothing else to say. You guys pretty much covered exactly how I feel. But I agree that it's kind of funny, these classics that are banned or challenged or whatever, because out of the four on this list right here, I read every single one of those in high school. And actually, two of them on there, Lord of the Flies and 1984, are some of my top favorite books ever. They really impacted me in a good way. I mean, they really made me think about a lot of issues that I think kids in high school should think about. And I don't know. I mean, part of me is like, yeah, these people are overreacting. But the other part is like, well, you know, they're the parents. They have to deal with the consequences of kids asking hard questions and, you know, coming to terms with what's in this book. And I mean, I don't agree with it, but I guess I understand why some people get really up in arms about this.
I don't.
No.
I'm looking at the classics list. Yeah, I've literally read like every single one.
Yeah, and what's super funny is the majority of, at least in like New England, the majority of high schools teach every classic on that list is part of an AP Lit class, American Lit. All of them are taught in some form or another. So I think it's really interesting that they're, you know, banned and challenged all over the place, but they are the books that create our entire curriculum in high school. So, of course, it's Banned Books Week. And what's a Banned Books Week without banning an actual book? So the Frank Augustus Miller Middle School actually called a vote on The Fault in Our Stars due to a few parents complaining that the subject matter involves teens dying of cancer who use crude language and have sex. So that was the premise for banning the book. The concern was that they didn't think it was appropriate for an 11, 12, or 13-year-old to read, and they were really shocked that it was in a middle school. So in a 6-to-1 vote, the book was pulled from the middle school shelves. It's still in the high school, but not in the middle school. So they're more concerned about an age range reading it rather than like an entire school or the content for like everyone. It's just the age range itself for who the book was accessible to. John Green, of course, heard about this, and his comment went as follows. I guess I'm both happy and sad. I am happy because apparently young people in Riverside, California will never witness or experience mortality since they won't be reading my book, which is great for them. But also, I'm sad because I was really hoping I would be able to introduce the idea to the human beings die to children of Riverside, California, and thereby crush their dreams of immortality. So, what do you guys think about that?
Classic John Green.
Yep, that
pretty much.
I don't think that it's inappropriate for that age group. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Like, I don't think I'm a very good, you know, barometer for these things. Because I just read whatever I wanted to read. My parents were like, oh, like, whatever. So, yeah, I don't know. Like, is it inappropriate to read as an 11-year-old? I wouldn't say so. I don't know the answer.
I read whatever I wanted when I was a kid, too, because I was always pretty far ahead of everybody else my age in terms of reading and understanding things. And my parents were like, read whatever you want. Like, they knew that it was never going to have this negative impact that I think a lot of parents think these things will have on their kids. But I guess it depends on the 11-year-old. I don't know. If you're raising your kid in a certain way and you haven't talked to them about certain things, I can understand why you wouldn't want them to get that information from books like this. At the same time, I think it's your responsibility as a parent to make sure they're aware of these things. But like I said, I don't agree with it, but I do understand why some parents would get upset over these things.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Jen, do you think it's appropriate for the age group? You're the teacher.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't teach it to that age group, per se. Because it is, the content is a little heavier than what I would teach to an 11-year-old, but given the guidance of a parent, I don't see why they can't read it.
Right. Yeah. Cause they're not talking about teaching it. They're just talking about it like being
right.
Alive.
So, but as long as the parent's reading it with them and having the conversation, I don't have a problem with it. So, but that's me. I was again, somebody who read whatever they wanted when they were younger. Nobody looked at the books I read. Nobody cared. I was reading. That's
yeah.
all that they cared
and
about.
And look what happened to all of us, guys. So that should be a lesson.
Are we not good examples? I miss that part.
Weird. Are we not role models for young readers?
So I don't know. I get that parents have things that they want to teach and they don't want to teach, and they're their children. They, you know, so by all means, but don't try to take it away from everybody because it's your choice. And that's right. always my thing with this kind of stuff is that you can make a choice for your child, but only your child. You don't get to make a choice for everyone else's children based on your beliefs.
Yeah. See, that's the thing, I guess. Like I agree completely with what you just said, but at the same time, I don't really understand a parent being like, you can read this, but you can't read this, because I have never experienced that. So, right. you know, even though like I vaguely understand, like that's a thing that happens. So, you know, people have very firm belief systems and, you know, certain media and things that don't fit into them, like they don't want their children to consume. I like in some weird abstract way, like I'm aware that that's a thing that happens. Like I just can't imagine how that happens, because it just seems like very strange to me. So yeah, just like whatever, guys, read what you want to read. I'm sure that this will be like the challenges or whatever, so I'm sure that there'll be things for this. They generally are for John Green books. More often than not, they're like they get reinstated on the shelves, so we shall see.
Absolutely. Okay, so let's talk about a little film that came out a couple weeks ago called The Maze Runner. Karen, do you want to tell us all about it?
Sure.
Did you love it? Did you love it, Karen?
I did.
Have you seen it again, Karen?
Yes. I've seen it twice.
How many times?
Twice, just twice, but I'm actually going to be seeing it with Danya when she comes to New York City, because it doesn't come out in the UK until, like, the beginning of October anyway, or sometime in October, and so I'm going to go see it with her, and it's going to be Fun, yay. But yeah, I've seen it twice and I liked it just as much the second time. I was a little worried that, you know, because I saw a screening before and we were like one of the first groups to see it, I was really afraid that it was just like this excitement clouding what I thought of the movie. But no, it was actually really good and I still really love it. Thought they did a fantastic job.
Awesome. Amerima, did you see it?
Yeah, I have actually, okay, so I haven't read any books recently, but I have seen lots of films, book, like, screen, whatever, adaptations.
Adaptations?
Yeah, that's the word I'm looking for. Yes, I saw The Maze Runner. I enjoyed it a lot. I don't know. I think, yeah, like, I said a lot before, I said when I first read it, actually, like, last year, that I thought it would play a lot better on screen than it did in the book, and I definitely stand by that, having seen it. I think just, you know, the story itself is, like, it's very cinematic, and, you know, it was a lot better, and, you know, it had the added bonus of me looking at Dylan O'Brien, so that was well appreciated. I think, though, you know, in terms of the plot, like, there are still the same issues that I had with the book. It's not my favorite book, as I have mentioned, but it did improve a lot for me on the screen. And I think if you liked the book, you would really, really love, excuse me, really, really love the film, because I think it was, like, a really great adaptation. And, you know, I thought, like, the cast was really good and it was really beautifully, like, designed and
yes.
Everything. That was really cool. I thought, I mean, we kind of knew that from the stills and stuff that they released, but even so, like, the scope of the maze and what they did with that, I thought was really excellent just aesthetically. So, yeah, I definitely enjoyed it a lot more. It was an improvement for me on the book. And I think even if you really loved the book, you know, you would really love the film as well. So that's, I guess, doing all the things that it needs to be doing.
Yes, what, absolutely.
What did you think about the changes in the movie? Because I was talking to Kyle and he was like, they changed everything. And I was like, really? I noticed a few changes, but the changes that were big, I feel like were actually an improvement over the book.
Yeah, I don't think the changes were bad. I actually, which is really funny, I took my brother to the screening with me, and he has not been to, like, something like this before, but he was super excited. He's, like, 25, you guys, but he was really excited to go, like, see The Maze Runner, because he had read the book, and so he loved it, and he noticed a couple of the changes, but he didn't have, like, a major issue with it. He's like, and of course, that's where they, you know, blah, blah, blah. He was complaining about a couple of things, but nothing, like, major. Most of his complaints were, like, about little minor things that really book nerdy people complain about. So, which is really funny, because if you guys saw my brother, he's, like, got tattoos and stuff everywhere, and, like, he's not your average young adult book reader. At least he doesn't look that way. But yeah, it was really interesting to sit and watch it with him from a different perspective, because he really loved the books, and so he was excited, and he liked what they did with the story for the most part.
I thought all of the changes were fine, and, like, people are going to get mad at me, but I guess I interviewed Dashna last year at Comic-Con, and the main thing we were talking about was, like, the removal of the telepathy storyline, and totally makes sense. And that's one that I know that people were like, oh, but why can't they, you know, because it doesn't play on screen, you know, like, that plays out in a book where you can read people's thoughts. On screen, that just is, like, super hokey.
Right.
So, you know, something like that, for example, I totally see why they cut that. I really liked the change about Albie being the first one there and, you know, having to do it by himself for a month. I thought that was really, really clever. Similarly with, like, the coma thing, I just thought, like, it just doesn't work, you know. It's like, that's just dead time on screen. So I actually thought all the changes, I thought they were minimal. I know some people were really upset about the look of the Grievers. But I guess maybe because I, you know, wasn't, like, the book's biggest fan, I didn't really have a really firm image in my head of what the Grievers were, although I found them a lot more menacing in the film than I ever did, like, reading the book. I liked the, I don't know, I guess they seemed, like, a lot faster to me in the film than I kind of got the impression that they were in the book, and I liked how they were just these kind of mechanical sort of creatures. I don't know. I thought it was good. And yeah, honestly, like, I I found the changes to be very minimal, but I'm not like the book's number one fan, so I haven't reread it since the first time I did. So maybe there are things that I'm forgetting that were changed in the book, but like, I don't know. Karen, what, like, you're a big fan. Were there other things? Have I missed things?
I don't think so. Actually, I'm really not the biggest fan of, well, the book. I mean, I love the movie, but the book, I think, had a lot of issues as well and definitely lent itself to a movie. So I'm glad they streamlined the plot a little bit, like you were saying, with no telepathy and Teresa wasn't in the coma. And I feel like that really moved the movie along pretty quickly, which is what it needed. I loved the Grievers. I didn't have a really firm idea of what they looked like from the book either. I thought that it was kind of open-ended, and what I pictured was way, way, way different from what they decided to go for in the film. I don't know if that's because, I think that was just because I didn't know really how to picture them, so I kind of came up with something on my own. But I thought they were terrifying in the movie, and I think they did a really great job of making them something that all of the kids would be really, really terrified of. So, I don't know. I'm definitely in the camp of loving the Grievers.
I feel like the Maze Runner... I feel like the Maze Runner changes were in the camp of, like, Hermione's dress in Goblet of Fire, you know what I mean? Like... people are really mad about it, but does it actually impact on anything? Like, is it actually a huge change? Like, no, it's not. So, yeah, I feel like you said, all of the changes were just really to streamline the plot, because it did drag in places in the book when everyone's sitting around being like, oh, like, why is this girl here? And, like, what are we going to do? And let's all think about what's going on. And,
yeah,
you know, you're like, all right, let's come on. It's the Maze of Runner. Let's do some running. Like, let's do something. Less talking, more running.
You have an action title, there must be action.
I thought the casting was really fantastic, and I can't remember his name now, so people are going to be mad at me, but the head runner, he was my favorite by far. Like, yeah, Minho was so fantastically cast. I mean, aside from Dylan O'Brien, who's, I just like his face, but I think he did a good job too. But I thought Minho was like really, really good. Yeah. I don't know why. He just really stood out to me from the rest of the cast. But they were all good.
Will Poulter was really good too, and his angry little self.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. They were all good.
There were a lot of really solid hits in this movie. Like, when they fell to the ground, like, you felt it. And I thought they did a good job of making Gally and Thomas fighting each other feel really physical and kind of terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah. The one other thing I have to applaud the film for was like the diversity of the cast, because, you know, obviously not in terms of gender, obviously, but you know, in terms of race, I thought that was really, really good that, you know, it wasn't even mentioned, and like, it wasn't part of it, but just in every scene, every like background scene, there were guys of all different races, and that was very encouraging to me, because it could have been very easily like whitewashed, you know, aside from Albie. So yeah, that was good.
Yeah.
Good job. Thumbs up, Maze Runner.
Well, and as we know, by the end of the first weekend for The Maze Runner, they announced that The Scorch Trials will be filmed and released same weekend in September, right? Is it September 22nd, I think, is when it's coming out? I think that's what they said. So within a year, there'll be a turnaround, and The Scorch Trials will be made and available for your viewing pleasure. And another Maze Runner announcement was that James Dashner announced that the Maze Runner series actually isn't finished, and that he is writing a prequel novel to the series, and it is called The Fever Code, and it's going to be about all the characters that are in the Maze Runner, so we'll see them before. So we'll see everything before Thomas enters the box. So Thomas, Teresa, Newt, Minho, Albie, and all the Gladers will be in this novel in some way, and it'll show us what life was like for them before Thomas showed up in the Glade.
That's
so
cool.
Yeah, that'd be kind of interesting.
Read the Scorch Trials. I didn't read anything other than The Maze Runner because I didn't really like it, so I'm excited for the film.
You're like, I like this idea. So I'm glad that it did well. Like, I think it definitely has the potential. And so when I saw what the numbers were and that it took the weekend, and I was glad it did well. It's kind of nice to have something out there that, you know, is doing well, that's different. So, all right, Karen, this next one on the list is all yours. Go ahead and talk about it. Do you okay. see what it is?
Yes. Sorry, I had to find the doc. yes! Rick Riordan announces a new series. So excited. This is called Magnus Chase and the Gods of Asgard, and it's going to be his Norse series. And we really don't know anything other than the main character's name is Magnus Chase, and it's going to be set in Boston. That's pretty much Loki. It. It's yes.
Someone, Karen, can you
go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, can you explain to me, because all I saw when this was announced was the Twitter hashtag queer Magnus Chase. Like, is that just people want a, like, LGBT character, or is that, like, because he said something, or, like, please explain.
Okay. As far as I know, we don't know what Magnus Chase's sexuality is going to be. A lot of people do want him to be queer. And the thing is, because I guess I probably shouldn't spoil this, so I'll keep it low-key, but low-key.
low-key.
But there, that was so bad. I'm so sorry. There's another character in his Heroes of Olympus series that is gay, or at least he's not straight. And a lot of people really liked that and wanted him to do it with a main character. So I think that's where that comes from. And he also got a question on Twitter the other day about, you know, are we ever going to get a gay character who, like, their point of view in one of the stories is the chapters, because in each of his books, the different chapters are from different characters' points of view. And he said, yes, spoiler, of course. And I think that refers to this character for Blood of Olympus, because we know that this character is going to have their own point of view. So I don't think that has to do with this, but I don't know, maybe people got a little confused and were thinking it could apply to that, or they just want that to happen.
Okay, so my next question, and now you'll be mad at me. Like, does he ever write anything that isn't, like, children of gods in various mythologies coming to terms with that?
He's written some other things. I haven't read them. But
yeah,
I think honestly,
his shtick, though.
Yeah, he found a formula that works. And I think he's going to stick with it. And some people are kind of like, eh, it's the same thing over and over again. And I definitely didn't like the Kane Chronicles as much as I like Percy Jackson. But I liked the Heroes of Olympus better than I liked Percy Jackson and the Olympians. So I don't know. Yes, this one could end up being really cool. And the awesome thing is Magnus Chase. Chase is Annabeth's last name. So there's sort of some connection there that we aren't aware of yet, and I'm really excited to learn how Magnus could be related to her.
Is the Kane Chronicles and the Percy Jackson, are there crossovers between those ones?
There's this short story that's a crossover, right?
So they're technically, like, all in the same universe?
They are.
Okay, so that, I don't like that.
Why not?
I mean, I haven't read them, but I don't like it.
Well, but they do
the Percy Jackson ones.
The cool thing about the Kane Chronicles is there's one brief mention of other gods, and that's it. The Kane Chronicles do not cross over at all with the books, but they're clearly set in the same world. He has written two short stories. There's going to be three total where characters from Percy Jackson and characters from the Kane Chronicles meet up and fight monsters together. So you could read the Kane Chronicles and not even ever have to have read Percy Jackson.
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't like the idea of them all, like, I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me. So that's, I mean, whatever.
It'll be all right.
So, and yeah, I like the idea of the Norse mythology, though. Like, that's very cool.
I'm super excited for Norse mythology.
Yeah, I bet.
That's awesome.
So the other thing is, at the end of October, the Blood of Olympus will be our book hype book of the month. So Karen will have lots to say on that episode. Hopefully she likes the book. Fingers crossed, kids. Fingers crossed.
What
so
if I
just no, keep
don't,
it.
Don't say
that.
Joke's on you.
Ha ha, Karen. Then we'll see Karen's true colors. They'll come out. She won't just be the nice one anymore.
Karen's never nice. She's so mean.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
So we will definitely be covering that at the end of October. So if you guys have questions as you're reading, make sure you jot them down and send them to us so that we can have it as part of our discussion. And this way you guys will know you'll be ready for that discussion at the end of the month. Two tidbits of news that broke over the last couple of weeks. Two new movie adaptations. The first is The Darkest Minds by Alex Bracken, which you guys have heard us talk about tons. The third book in that series, In the Afterlight, is coming out later in the month of October, which is super exciting, and we'll actually have an excerpt from that coming up really soon. And so that'll be a really interesting adaptation. I think that it'll be kind of cool to see how they play that one out with
I don't think it's
everyone's
going to work.
powers and abilities. I know, that's what I mean. Like, there's some of the stuff that works and some of the stuff that doesn't. So I'm not
That's
really sure.
no, it's not going to work. It's
Don't say
going to be like
that.
one step too far. One step too far from the Hunger Games. There isn't a big enough fan base. It's too similar and at the same time like not similar enough that it's going to have the crossover fans and it's going to like get one movie and they're not going to get the turnout and like that's going to be it. It's not gonna work.
No.
I just can't see it working like at all. It
I
doesn't have the fan base for it.
yeah,
Like I
I
hate
do
to say it,
understand
but if
that.
you want to do a trilogy sci-fi adaptation right now, like you need to have the fans or it doesn't go.
But even sometimes when they have the fans, it doesn't go.
Well,
Do you
yeah, but
really
I mean,
think
if you
it?
don't have the fans, then you've got no hope. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I hear you.
Yeah,
And then,
it's a surprising one to me that got picked up, honestly.
well, it fits the theme of along the lines of the other things that are out there
I guess.
right now. I mean, really. So, and then the other one that got picked up is Let It Snow, which is a book with short stories in it. So
Have
did
you
they
guys read this?
ages and ages and ages ago.
I
I
have read this.
haven't.
I'm actually more excited for this one.
Right, but how are they going to make it work? It's three
Well,
separate stories.
I think it's going to be like kind of Love Actually
I
for
was thinking
teenagers,
that. I was totally
which
going to
would be
say that.
really cute.
Yeah,
And
that I can
honestly,
work.
like they haven't done any. We haven't seen an adaptation of something along these lines.
No.
So I think that will work because, like obviously these are, holiday romance stories. So there are like three stories and they kind of cross over, but they're told as their own individual stories. So I think probably they'll just add a couple more like crossover elements into them so
Yeah.
that they like impact each other a little more and then they can have the stories like going at the same time. And yeah, it'll
That's
be like a little
totally
mini Love
binary.
Actually.
I can see, because I was thinking like the Valentine's Day and the Love Actually, which are all those really super sappy holiday movies that they come out with. So that was the only thing.
Right.
So I'm like, how is that gonna work? Like, wait,
No, I can totally see this working like really well actually. And I think it'll be fun to see like something kind of different instead of angsty teen or dystopian teen. It's
Or
like
death teen.
right. It's like a little holiday romance teen. And one of the good things that this story has I actually found this book like very enjoyable when I read it. I thought the three writers were really good. Maybe I prefer John Green when there's a little less John Green. Actually, that's definitely right. I prefer John Green when there's a little less John Green because Will Grayson is like my favorite of his books.
Yeah, so yeah, he needs to be diluted for you.
Yeah, but I really like Maureen Johnson,
Yeah, Maureen Johnson, and
especially.
then Lauren Marical is the other one. So they're three very well-known authors. So I mean, it'll just be interesting. I can't wait to see how they kind of play that one out. So,
Yeah.
and one last thing before I forget, because I totally almost forgot, Marima, tell us about your love for the Mockingjay trailer.
Oh my God, you guys, it was so good. Oh my God, it was so good. I'm so excited for this movie. If people didn't realize already, I am like the Hunger Games number one fangirl. Yeah, I mean, did you guys enjoy it? Was it exciting for you? It was so exciting for me.
Yeah, no, I think it looks amazing. And some of
Yeah,
the
I think.
stills and stuff that they've put out there, I'm like, oh my God.
Oh yeah, and I think they've also done a really good job of like not spoiling where it is split,
Right.
which is exciting because a lot of the stuff they showed in there makes you think like, oh, it's definitely split here, but then you think like, no, that's too far into the book, and they could have added scenes in, and I don't know. You can definitely see like some bits that are in it, but not all of it. So this is gonna be so good,
Yeah, and
and
what's your girl's name? Natalie
Natalie
Dormer?
Dormer looks
She looks
amazing.
so
She
badass in
is
this
so
film.
great,
Woo! Can
right?
I just tell you guys, I sat next to Marima at Comic-Con and we were watching like a badass women's panel and Natalie Dormer was on it and Marima could not stop her love for this girl woman. She's like, "Oh my God, I love her. Oh my God, she's so amazing. Oh my God, did you hear what she just said?" Like for the whole panel. So
Yeah, I think Andrew was like, do you want to like write something about this? And I was like, don't even talk to me right now.
You're like, I can't do that right now.
Yeah, I was like, do not talk to me. I'm in the Natalie Dormer zone. Exactly. Yeah, if people do know, like, I am so in love with Natalie Dormer. So, and I just think she's going to be so great in this. Like,
yeah,
I like that, you know, two movies means more Natalie Dormer screen time. And she looks so badass, like, with her half-shaved head. She looks super cool. I think all the other characters, like look really good. I just think everyone looks really good. I love everything about these movies, you know? Like, I think this is, like, Karen's Maze Runner thing. Like, I just can't say anything wrong about the Hunger Games movies. I just think they are, like, the best. I think they're the best adaptations, like, that have been done. And, you know, they're just so good. So I'm super excited. It was about time that we had a full-length trailer.
Yeah.
So it
definitely does look really good. So there's something to look forward to this fall.
Yay! I really like Jennifer Lawrence's look in the trailer too. They've really kind of changed her. Like, her hair is down and it's wavy. It's not in the braid, and she looks like, in certain scenes, you can tell everything's really starting to get to Katniss, and you can just sort of see that evolution in the trailer already. And I'm really excited about, because Mockingjay is like a very, it's about her emotions more than anything, really, and everything that she's going through at this time. And just to see that so plainly on Jennifer Lawrence's face makes me really excited for what she's gonna bring to the role in these two movies.
Oh yeah, I mean my bad, like, the reason I don't say, oh my god, Jennifer Lawrence is amazing, is because, like, I just feel like that's a given. Yeah. Obviously Jennifer Lawrence is amazing, you know, she's always amazing. But yeah, I think, you know, the reason that the films sell so well and, like, and are so great for fans and non-fans alike is because Jennifer Lawrence really is the reason for that. So yeah, it looks so good. I'm super stoked.
Yay.
I actually, speaking of adaptations, I saw a couple others in the last couple of weeks. I saw If I Stay and I saw The Giver.
Finally. How did you feel about those?
I felt vaguely indifferent to both of them. I liked If I Stay more. This is the thing. I just really didn't like Chloe Moretz. I thought she was really bad. And if she had been better, I think I would have really liked If I Stay. But she just seemed really flat. And she wasn't engaging. I thought Jamie Blackley was so fantastic. Yeah, and
do you know he sings? He's actually singing in the film. He's the one.
Is that
singing.
Actually him?
It's actually him singing and playing in the film.
Well, that, you know, that doesn't surprise me. It's like, he seems like that kind of guy that could just do that stuff.
It's kind of super impressive, actually, when I found out. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me right now. But yeah, no. Yeah. So I was very impressed with him as well.
Yeah, I thought he was great. I thought the family scenes were so good. Like, they cast her family so well. And all of that, you know, the supporting cast in that film, especially considering, like, most of them weren't really name actors. But they all put in really great performances.
Yeah.
But then, you know, the thing is, you're stuck with Mia for the whole film. And if you don't like Mia, like, you're not going to like the film.
Yeah.
So that was kind of my issue with it, unfortunately. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. But I've seen a lot of people say similar things. They just weren't really into her performance. So that's a shame. And then The Giver, was, I mean, okay, so...
Find your nice words, Marima.
I loved The Giver, but just the nature of how the world is presented in, like, black and white and then going to color is just, it plays really badly on screen. It just makes the color scenes and all of this seem like really, I don't know, like an inspirational travel commercial or something. It's just... But what else can you do with it? I don't know. I thought it was fine. I didn't really have strong feelings about it either way. I thought the cast was pretty good. I don't know. Yeah, it was okay. I wouldn't see it again. I don't know if I'd recommend it. Maybe if you really, really liked the book, you would really, really like the film. But, yeah, sorry, my bad. Did you guys see The Giver? Did you like it? I would be curious.
I didn't see it. I didn't really have the desire to.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't really the one that was like desperate to see it, but I saw it and yeah, good times. So it's been a week of book to film adaptations in Marima's life.
Yeah,
I think I'm caught up now on all of the ones that I needed to see.
I am this week the Gone Girl comes out and I am so excited to see that movie.
Right, and I keep hearing that they changed the ending.
They
and
did.
I keep hearing, no, they didn't change the ending. And
they
it's
lied.
Like, you've done such a good job in like making me want to see this film.
Yeah, no. See, I've
know.
Read
did
in many places that they've changed it. That because Gillian Flynn was in on all of this, she did a lot of the writing, and so I like want to know because it's her stamp of anything that happens in this film, she was highly involved in. So
yeah,
there, I swear there's an interview where she said that they rewrote the ending. But maybe
yes,
they lied to us so that readers of the book will be, you know, surprised one way or another.
Yeah,
but
I think they're actively like one of them is a lie, obviously. But yeah, I think they're doing it because it makes sense. Like it's a mystery.
Right.
You know, and there'll be people who'd be like, well, like I already read the book, I know what happens. Like why would
yeah,
I see
but
the film?
No, but seeing like I think seeing it on like unfurl on film is gonna be amazing. Like they keep showing the trailers for it, and every time I see it, I'm like, yes, I need this movie. Like Neil Patrick Harris as the creepy guy, bring it.
It's gonna be so good. But you know what I mean? Like, I'm sure that there are people in the audience who are like, oh, but like, why would I see it if I already know what happens? You know, I mean, obviously you should see it anyway because it's amazing. Nice. But, you know, that being said, like, if you honestly don't know if it's going to end the way you think it's going to end, like, that's really clever. That's such a clever marketing thing because, like, now I was going to see it anyway, but now I'm like, I have to see it so early so that I'm not spoiled
exactly.
on a film adaptation of a book that I've read.
So
you know, like I'm worried about being spoiled on the Gone Girl film. This doesn't happen. So
this is a moment for you.
Right. So good job, Gone Girl people. Like you're doing a good job of this.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty excited. So I can't wait to see it. I'm probably not going to see it till Friday, but when it comes out, because I don't. The screening passes that I could have gotten is when open houses at school. I'm so unhappy with school right now. I'm like, really? You couldn't have chosen a different night for open house. You're interfering with my plans.
Right. That's like when the Guardians of the Galaxy screening was while I was in America. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. I could have seen this like 3 weeks early. And I'm in this stupid other country without having seen Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh,
I was so mad about it. Yeah. That's pretty,
Yep, good times, good times. All right, so I think that wraps up our random thoughts about books this week.
Yay!
Woohoo! So next week we'll be back with a new episode. I'm not sure what it's going to be about yet. So if you guys have thoughts, anything you want us to talk about, of course, hit us up on Twitter or leave us a message on the post. We will be happy to chat about, you know, anything book related. That's just how we roll. So, right. So until next week, I'm Jen.
I'm Karen.
And I'm Marima.
Bye, guys.
Bye.